Allahu Barakatuhu, which means may the peace, mercy and blessings of God be with you. Welcome to Cambridge University Islamic Society's Experience Islam Week, where we hope you can see things differently. Tonight we focus on the life of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, as presented by Professor Sadiq Ramadan. There are handouts available, so if you'd like to make notes, you can do so on those. You also should have a feedback form. Please do fill these out so we have some kind of idea about how the event went. There are some seats around if people want to just fill them up near the front and come sit down. We will start with the traditional Islamic introduction, which is the recitation of the Quran. On your handouts, there is the English translation, so please do follow along as the recitation is being made.
صدق الله رسوله الرؤيا بالحق لتدخلن المسجد الحرام إن شاء الله آمنين محلقين رؤوسكم ومقصرين لا تخافون فعلم ما لم تعلموا فجعل من ذلك فتحا قريبا هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله وكفى بالله شهيدا محمد رسول الله والذين معه أشداء على الكفار رحماء بينهم تراهم ركعا سجدا يبتغون فضلا من الله ورضوانا سيماهم في وجوههم من أثر السجود ذلك مثلهم في التوراة ومثلهم في الإنجيل كزرع أخرج شطأه فآزره فاستغلظ فاستوى على سوقه يعجب الزراع ليغيظ بهم الكفار وعد الله الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات منهم مغفرة وأجرا عظيما
Tonight's speaker is Professor Sadiq Ramadan. He holds a Master in Philosophy and French Literature and a PhD in Arabic and Islamic Studies from the University of Geneva. He also received one-on-one intensive training in classical Islamic scholarship from Al-Azhar in Egypt. He is a Professor of Contemporary Islamic Studies at the University of Oxford and also teaches at the faculty there. He is at the same time a visiting professor in Qatar and Morocco and a senior research fellow in Doshisha University in Japan. Through his writings and lectures, he has contributed substantially to the debate on contemporary Islamic issues, Islamic revival in the world and Muslims in the West. He is active both at the academic and grassroots levels, lecturing extensively throughout the world on theology, Islamic law, jurisprudence, applied ethics, philosophy, social justice, economy, politics, interfaith, and intercommunity dialogue. He is currently the president of the European think tank, the European Muslim Network in Brussels. Tonight's talk focuses on his latest book, The Messenger, The Meanings of the Life of Muhammad. We'll start with a short reading. The Prophet came to humankind with a message of faith, ethics, and hope, in which the One reminds all people of his presence, his requirements, and the final day of return and encounter. Though Muhammad came with this message, throughout his life he kept listening to women, children, men, slaves, rich and poor, as well as outcasts. He listened to and welcomed and comforted them. And elect among the inhabitants of this earth, he concealed neither his fragility nor his doubts. In fact, God had, very early on, made him doubt himself so that he should never henceforth doubt his own need for him, and shown him the reality of his failings, so that he should seek his perfect grace and remain indulgent towards his fellow human beings. He was a model, not only through his qualities, but also through his doubts, his wounds, and occasionally, as we have seen, his errors of judgment, which either revelation or his companions would point out. However, absolutely everything in his life was an instrument of renewal and transformation, from the slightest detail to the greatest events. The Muslim faithful, believers of any faith, and all who study Muhammad's life, regardless of personal religious belief, can derive teachings from this, thus reaching toward the essence of the message and the light of faith. The Prophet prayed, mediated, transformed himself, and transformed the world. Guided by his educator, he resisted the worst in himself and offered the best in his being, because such was the meaning of jihad. Such was the meaning of the injunction commanding believers to promote good and prevent evil. His life was the embodiment of that teaching. Muhammad's life journey offered at every stage an existence devoted to the worship of God. The heart cannot but commune with such a being as he follows the path to freedom. Freedom not only to think or act, for which Muhammad fought with dignity, but also the freedom of a being who had liberated himself from his attachments to superficial emotions, destructive passions, or alienating dependence. Everybody loved, cherished, and respected him, because his demanding spirituality enabled him to transcend his ego, to give himself, and in turn, to love without bondage. Divine love was free from human dependence. He submitted, and he was free. He submitted in the peace of the divine, and he was free from the illusions of the human. He had once told one of his companions a secret of real love. Keep away from, do not envy, what men love, and men will love you. God had inspired him to follow the path to the love that continues this love. My servant keeps getting closer to me through freely chosen devotions until I love him. And when I love him, I am the hearing through which he hears, the sight through which he sees, the hand through which he holds, and the foot through which he walks. God's love offers the gift of proximity to the divine and transcendence of the self. God's love is a love without dependence, a love that liberates and elevates. In the experience of its closeness, one perceives the presence of the being, of the divine. Muhammad had followed a path that entailed a number of different stages: the call of faith, exile, return, and finally departure to the first resting place, the last refuge. All along the way, beginning with his initiation, God had accompanied the messenger with his love, and he caused human beings to accompany him with their love as well. The Prophet carried universal message, both in the experience of love present throughout his life and his reminders to people of the need to adhere to a universal ethics that transcends divisions, affiliations, and rigid identities. This was a true freedom, the freedom of a being who loves with justice and does not allow himself to be entrapped by passions springing from his race, nation, or identity. His love, illuminating his ethical sense, made him good. His ethical sense guiding his love made him free. profoundly good among men and extraordinarily free from them. Such were the two qualities that all companions recognized in the last prophet. He was beloved by God and an example among humans. He prayed, he contemplated. He loved, he gave. He served, he transformed. The prophet was the light that leads to light, and in learning from his life, believers return to the source of life and find his light, his warmth, and his love. The messenger may have left the human world, but he has never taught us to forget him, the supreme refuge, the witness, the most near. Bearing witness that there is no God but God is, in effect, stepping toward deep and authentic freedom. Recognizing Muhammad as a messenger is essentially learning to love him in his absence and to love him in his presence. Loving and learning to love God, the Prophet, the creation, and humankind. Can I ask at this moment, since we're so full, for the Islamic Society members to perhaps stand and take a seat on the floor, just to welcome the guests and make sure they have a seat. We appreciate it.
Thank you for this invitation this evening and talking about the Prophet, peace be upon him, and which kind of teaching that we can get from his life. I asked them to read the last few pages of the book, because in fact it's a summary of what I think it's important when we study the Prophet's life and the message, and him as a witness and as a model. We all know as Muslims that what we had in the Quran is لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ. You have in the messenger the best model that you have to follow. The problem is that we have a problem with following, the very meaning of following an example and understanding the example. The way we are teaching here what is his life today as Muslims very often is we know the dates, we know the facts, and we forget the meaning. And the meaning of his life, in fact, is central. Why? Because today, if someone wants to know something about Islam, I think that the last thing to do is to give her or to give him the Quran. The Quran is not the easiest way. It's not the easiest way to understand Islam. It's not the easiest book to read. From a spiritual viewpoint, it could happen. Anything could happen with the Quran because the Quran has its secrets. But still, when it comes to understanding Islam, to understand the very meaning of Islam, the best is really to go through the Prophet's life, the seerah, and to get a sense of not only the principles, but also the way these principles were implemented during his life. And when it comes to, you know, the chronology, but what is also important is when you get to the seerah, what we call the seerah, is the Prophet's life, you connect his life with the verses of the Quran which were revealed in a specific period of time. And you get a better understanding first of the verses and then the whole message, the way it was constructed over time. Because the Quran is an eternal message rooted in a specific history. 23 years of revelation telling you what is eternal coming from history. And you cannot get the eternity of the message if you don't understand the history of its revelation. If you don't get that, you don't understand the steps. And if you don't understand the steps, you don't understand the objectives. Why? Because in the Quran there is a divine pedagogy. The Quran is a book, it's a dialogue. God is talking to you. And it's talking to you through the way this book was implemented in his life. And his life is your model. And if you get the sense of the model, you will understand the meaning and the substance of the book. So there is a mirroring effect here. You have to go from this to understand that. And it's where you get the very deep essence. If you look at the way the God, the One, was talking to the messengers, and especially the last one for us, is the last one confirming what was said to the previous messengers and prophets. Something which is quite important here is to understand what he tried to do with him, and of course he did, as an example for all the Muslims and for all the believers. And this is why we get the sense of the universality of the message. But to get the universality of the message, you have to go very deep in the meanings and the substance of what is done, what is said, and in the way it is said. And if you come to this, you understand one thing which is important. First, I myself, I keep on repeating this, because when I was writing this book, I changed myself. I went through a transformational process. When I was asked before what is the main principle of Islam, I was to say justice. And I was taking the means for the ends. In fact, justice is means. It's a means towards something which is beyond that. Justice is the only way to get peace. But at the end, in Islam, there is salam, which is peace. Etrolu fi silmi kafa, enter in God's peace with all your heart, all your being. This is the point. The way towards happiness, the way towards reconciliation, nurun ala nur, the light of revelation coming to the light of your heart to reconcile the two dimensions, this is peace. And this is Islam. So anything which has to do with a very superficial English translation towards surrender or submission is wrong. In fact, is literally right, substantially wrong. If you understand what I mean. The substance is wrong. It's not this. It's not the submission of your being. It's a reconciliation of your being with the being in order to get freedom. The freedom of faith. Reconciliation. So this is why one of the most important invocations, supplications that we have in the Quran is Allahumma zalamna anfusana. We have been unjust with our own self. And what is this injustice towards your own self is not to listen to all the dimensions of the self. You need to eat and you eat. You need to love and you need to love. And love is central. This is why all the words that you have been was repeated in the last, is love. In kuntum tuhibbun Allah is a condition. At the end of the day, you reconcile yourself with yourself if you love Him. Why? Because you have it in the Quran. وَعَلَمُوا أَنَّ اللَّهَ يَحُولُ بَيْنَ الْمَرْءِ وَقَلْبِهِ. And know, it's knowledge. It's not only something that you feel, it's knowledge. That the knowledge of God, it's between you and your heart. So come back to yourself is the way you go to Him. And this is what you got from the very beginning, if you get the sense of the Islamic terminology. And I would say to all the students here who are studying Islam or being part of ISAC or any kind of Islamic organizations, it's your duty to be able to go from Arabic and English and to get better translations of what we have now. Because we are misleading ourselves and our brothers and sisters in humanity by the way we translate some of the Islamic terminology. We are not serious and we are not deep enough with the Islamic Arabic terminology in the way we have to understand it. And this is problematic. Because when we come now to something which is this Islam, which is reconciliation, and we get this through the Prophet's life, there is another dimension which is quite important here, is this understanding that straight after Allah calling himself Allah, I am the one, La ilaha illallah, there is no God but Allah, the one. And once again, some of our brothers and sisters in Islam, when they speak in English, they say, when I speak about God, I will say Allah, to make it different from what the British people are saying. And I would say that's wrong. Allah in Arabic is God in English, the one, and it's the same. So we are not scared of language, because the Christian, the Coptic tradition, when they speak in Arabic, in Egypt, they say Allah when they speak about God. So it's so worrying, it was so worrying for some of the Muslims that in Indonesia, they imposed onto the Christian not to use Allah when they speak about God. In Malaysia, I think it was in Malaysia. So I think that this is completely wrong. I think that it's just proof that we are not confident. In fact, it's his name and he is the one. And then, in this understanding here, there is something which is coming straight from the beginning. When God is talking to the messenger, peace be upon him, he's speaking about a Rabb. A Rabb. And we translated this in English into Lord. In fact, in the root of the word Rabb, there is tarbiyya. Tarbiyya means education. In fact, a Rabb is the educator. He is the educator of this man who is going to be the messenger. And who is the educator? Is God. Taking him from the very beginning and educating him step after step, and step by step to come to being able to bear the message. And this is why it's important from the beginning. In fact, the starting point of everything, it's, we keep on repeating this, that in fact, the first verses that he got, and we got this from the Sirah, is أَقْرَ بِسْمِ رَبِّكَ الَّذِي خَلَقَ. Read in the name of your Lord who created. In fact, read in the name of your educator who created mankind. He is the creator. And read is something which is the starting point. But listen to this. From the very beginning, the first revelations that came to the messenger are those very short chapters that we start by keeping by heart because they are very short. This is what we give to our kids when they are small and they are young. Just get them. Allahu Ahad, very quick, very short, that's easy. And in fact, these are the verses that the educator used to change the perception and to change the heart of the messenger. They are the verses of conversion, and conversion means change the way you look at things. God, who loves you, is teaching you, you have to change the way you look at things. The way you look at the sky, the way you look at the mountain, the way you look at the desert, tell me the way you look at nature, I will know the relationship that you have with the creator of the nature. Converting your heart, it's a conversion. But this conversion is reconciliation. Reconciliation between what and what? Between you and the meaning of life. The one is telling you, I created all this nature for you to see signs of what my presence, because my presence is your meaning, is the sense of the meaning of your life. And if someone is responding to your question, and the question was, the Prophet, peace be upon him, left everything. He was 35 years old, said, I'm not happy. Why? Because I have a question, I don't have an answer. And the question is why? And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know why I'm leaving. And all these people are worshipping idols, and these idols are not responding. The The problem with idols is their silence. I need an answer. And Allah is coming with Nurun ala Nur. You have this spark, al-fitra, which is the universal thing, which is so important, that asking, why am I here? And the revelation is coming as an answer. And this is why we have in the Quran, Nurun ala Nur. Light upon light. Your question is a spark, and he was looking at this. He was going to the alone in the mountain, getting an answer. I need an answer. He was unsatisfied. And he got an answer. And God is telling him from the very beginning, and this is something which is important. Our relationship is a relationship of love. I give you an answer because I love you. And as you get the answer, you should know who you love. Question and answer. And it's a reconciliation. You will never be at peace if you only have questions. So Salamat al-Islam is the very deep question that he had at the beginning. And this is why it's universal. It's a universal experience to look for questions. So this is why I'm very worried sometimes to see some Muslims so being so afraid of philosophy. Because philosophy is the realm of questions. Be careful with the people who think that they have all the answers and have no questions. This is not following the Prophet, peace be upon him. He was pushing the people towards questions. Why? Because when you get the questions, you are in a situation where you are in need. You are in need of him. So the very essence of faith is just humility, knowing that he is in need of him. Remember, these are the last words of the text. But remember what Abu Bakr as-Siddiq radiallahu anhu said, when the people were, even Umar ibn al-Khattab was saying, the first one who is saying that the Prophet has passed away, I'm going to kill him. And he stopped him. And anyone who was worshipping the Prophet should know that he is dead. But God, Hayyun la yamut, he's alive, he's not going to die. So your worship is never take the means for the ends. So the Prophet is a means. And we love this means, why? Because he's part of the answer to our questions. Why? So you get this from his experience, himself. I am but a human being. This is what is repeated in the Quran. So the starting point is to understand that we have intellectual questions and we have spiritual answer. So this reconciliation is knowledge and love. Knowledge and love. Islam is all about this. Get knowledge and learn to love. This is why the Prophet was always repeating, Allahumma nas'aluka ilman nafi'a. Oh God, we are asking you useful knowledge. But what is useful knowledge? Useful knowledge is knowledge to help me to love better. In the way we are going to treat nature, why do you think that we don't have to waste anything and we have to respect the food trees, for example, and nature? Why? Only because we are scared of catastrophes? This is the attitude of the merchant. I'm not going to do this because I'm going to destroy myself. This is not what is said in the Quran. Why the Prophet, peace be upon him, was saying to all the people, no suffering for the animals. Respect water. Respect the food trees. Respect nature. Why? Because the way you show respect to nature is the way you show love to the Creator. It's out of love that you are doing this. Don't waste water because you love him. So ask yourself, in our daily life, this is so important now. That is so just unbelievable how much the voices of the Muslims in such critical questions now are absent. It's as if we don't care about that. But by don't caring about it, it's just showing that we don't get the deep teachings. It's a question of love. Ecology, environment, it's a question of love. It's the way you treat, and the way we treat, you know, as I'm always saying, he was just passing by someone who was preparing to slaughter an animal, and he was, you know, treating him in a bad way. Do you want? And he was showing him how he was, how do you say this?
a sharpie,
yes, and say, do you want to kill it twice? Is this the way you do it? And we get only the technicalities of that. Why the substance, the essence is show respect to the suffering of the animals is to show love towards God. So for us, this is a process which started with the two things. Get knowledge to know how to love better. First thing with whom? The way he was orphan. First, fatherless, no father, and then no mother. And then he kept on repeating his whole life that he was coming from somewhere. My mother, my father, Muhammad ibn Abdullah. He's coming from somewhere. If you don't know how to love your parents, tell me how you are going to show to the world that you love God. If you don't know how to show respect. There is no way to paradise if you get where you are coming from. My mother and my father is critical. In our societies now with the Muslims, you know, we are talking about the Prophet's life, peace be upon him. Let us come to this essence of everything. The true relationship to the one that we love is to show respect to the parents that we have. No paradise without their love. And it's a liberating process. Why? Because at the end of the day, it's the very meaning of love. You can, as I was saying in the text, you can love for yourself, or you can love for the sake of him. This is exactly the Abrahamic experience. Who do you love more? And you know what? You find it in Judaism, in Christianity, in Islam, and same stories in the Hinduism and Buddhism and all the spiritualities. At the end of the day, you have love that is helping you to detach yourself from your ego or to be jailed in your ego. The first jail is yourself. And this is what the Prophet, peace be upon him, was showing. So this is the universal message, and it started with this. It's this liberating process. But there is something which is important with knowledge and love. The only way to get that is through education. Is the worship the one remembering that he is the educator. Who Allah, wa huwa Rabb. Allah is the one, and Rabb is the educator, helping you to come to the one. No spirituality without education. And he himself, the Prophet, peace be upon him, went through all these stages, educating, understanding the people. And the way he was with his parents, his absent parents, is just to let us understand how much it's important. It's the path toward the one, is to respect the parents that you have. And the way he was with his own kids, and his daughters, who today is standing up when his daughter is coming to him, or her daughter is coming, standing up, Fatima, when she was coming, having this kind of secret communication, hearts and hearts and smiles and smiles and sighs. This is the Prophet, peace be upon him. But the problem is with us, we know all the facts of his life, but not the details. And meanings are very often in details. Details, when he was smiling, when he was standing up, when he was coming to her and saying, I'm going to give you the best gift. I can't give you a servant, but I can give you supplications. I can tell you how you can pray, but I can give you someone who can help in you. Why? Because the one who is going to help you is going to spread the sense of injustice within the community. But to give you the best, which is supplication, the way you talk to God, this is the way I can help you. So these are dimensions that we have to get to understand in which way the conversion of the heart is the starting point of faith. And it happened with him. And it happened in the way he was. And then there are steps which were very important. We are idealizing the companions and the way they were. It was not easy. Umar ibn al-Khattab sometimes, radiallahu anhu, was very harsh. He was not happy after Sulh al-Hudaybiyyah. He was not happy with the Prophet. He was just even silent, saying, no, it's wrong. We are right, they are wrong. and he kept him far from the issue. Why? Because when you have the mindset of Omar, you can't always understand the mindset of the messenger, peace be upon him. As much as he was not doubting God, but doubting himself, he was listening. You know what? How we call this in contemporary basic psychology? It's called intellectual empathy. You talk to people who don't share your views, and you put yourself in their position, and you understand where they are, from where they are talking. When he was with in Sulh al-Hudaybiyah, look at this, deep faith, deep understanding, knowledge. Going through all the process, knowing how to talk to his people, because they were believers. But now he was facing people who for 13 years they were against him, say, that's wrong, you are not the prophet, you are not the messenger. And he came and there was an agreement. Now we need an agreement between you and me, we need to find a way. And say, okay, that's fine, let us come to an agreement. And the agreement is only right when it's on an equal footing. It's not, I'm right, you are wrong, come to an agreement. That's not going to work. And he listened to what they had to say. And said, look, you start by saying, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, we don't know what is ar-Rahman, we don't know what is ar-Rahim. You know, Bismillah. So we keep this, that's fine. Remove this. Ali, who was his the companion that time, and he was the writer, said, I can't do that. I said, remove that. And then, Muhammad Rasulullah, Muhammad, the messenger of God. I said, look, I've been fighting against you for 13 years because we don't believe that you are the messenger. So remove that. You are Muhammad ibn Abdullah. Ali, I can't do that. You are the messenger. One is talking from his truth. The other one is understanding the intellectual empathy. They are right. They are right. I think they are wrong, but from where they are right. From where I am, they are wrong. From where they are right. So which is exactly the opposite of any Aristotelian position that two things could be right at the same place, same people. But in fact, it's not the same people. So he said, that's fine, remove it. They are right, Muhammad ibn Abdullah. I want you to understand this, that he is the one who liberated himself, reconciled himself with the very meaning, but he never lost a sense of humanity. And this is why it's very important to love, and it's very important to use this love to understand. Because at the end of the day, you can't get intellectual empathy if you don't like human beings. You get the point? If you don't respect humanity, if you don't respect the humanity of human beings, you don't get intellectual. There is something which is, I respect you. I love what God has put into you, even though I don't like the way you use this. But there is something which is deep respect here. You don't get intellectual empathy if you don't respect the people you are talking to. Arrogance is not going to make it. Arrogance is exactly the opposite of intellectual empathy. And this is what we got from the messenger. And I think that this is things that we have to study, to understand this. And there is a last story, and I will end with this, to let you comment and ask questions. Is in this story, it's, and if you go through all this process, is to get a sense that that he had also with the community. This is, for example, in when it was Sulh al-Hudaybiyah. But before that, when he arrived in Medina, he arrived with people who were al-Muhajirun, people who were experiencing exile. And these people, they came with the principles of Islam, but also with their culture. They were from Mecca, and Mecca was a specific environment with a specific culture. When they arrive in Medina, and Medina and Mecca is not too far, but the culture in Medina was not the same as the culture in Mecca. And they experienced firsthand something which is, how do we keep the principles when we are changing cultures? and the Muslims who are living in Britain now, you, great majority of you are Muslims living in this country. This experience of exile, which is how do you keep the principles, the priorities, and how do we deal with a new cultural environment? It happened. And there is something which is very important. He taught the people, and when Omar ibn al-Khattab came to him and said, you know what? My wife is answering back. Because he was not used to this. In Mecca, I speak, you listen. Which is still the case in some families now. I speak, you listen. In Medina, I speak, and I speak. Both are speaking. And he smiled when Omar ibn al-Khattab came to him to tell him this. Because in fact, the way the Meccan people were was more cultural than Islamic. Nothing wrong with woman answering back. If it's right, if it's wrong, this is a discussion, a communication between a man and a woman. Islam respects that. Even the culture of origin in Mecca was not accepting this because of the culture. So Omar had to change his cultural way in the name of the true Islamic principles. So this experience is important. And for some of us who came from countries of origin, Egypt like me, or Pakistan, or India, or Bangladesh, or whatever, Turkey, we are having this, you know, cultural way of dealing with the principles. The jihad here is how do we question our cultures in the name of our principles? Why? Because at the end of the day, if you have the right principles, but you deal with the cultural dimension in the wrong way, you will never get peace. You're not going to be at peace. And look at what is happening with many Muslims now in Britain and elsewhere. They are not at peace. They are torn apart. They don't know how to deal with this. It's as if they are not finding their way in the culture. And it happened at the very beginning of Islam that you have to challenge this. Because at the end, you have to ask yourself, which kind of reconciliation you want, and which kind of freedom. So to be able to say, and to be free from people, don't follow the people to please them. It's not the way. You're not here to please the people. You are here also by freeing your ego, is also to teach the people the way not to be under the pressure or alienated by the culture, because the consumer culture is problematic. The consumerist culture is exactly the opposite of being at peace with yourself. The consumerist culture is nurturing in you the need. You are always in need of something. Spirituality is telling you this, the opposite. You have to go beyond the need and to get this reconciliation between your questions and your answers. But this is what we get from his life. If you come to all this, but to get this meaning and to understand that, we have to go deep in his life, to get a sense of the facts and to try to get what is behind this, and to understand at the end of the day, he knew that he was going to leave. You remember Socrates before he was to die? It would have been possible for him to flee and just to leave the place, and he said no. All my life, I wanted my soul to be separated from my body. No, it's 2 minutes, don't worry. All my life, I wanted this. So now they're giving it to me. They want to kill me, I'm going to just achieve what I was here for. I just separate my body from my soul. So let them do it. And he refused, and he stayed. And just before dying, he said, remember, I have to give sacrifice to this God. I don't want to live with that. So don't forget that. Which is exactly what we have in all the spiritualities. Be careful. Don't leave this world with that. You have to sort everything. So if you have done something wrong with someone, go and try to reconcile yourself with him or her. with your parents, with love. You know what he said just before leaving? If I had to choose someone and to be my friend, I would have chosen him. And he was referring to Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. His debt of love, he was just saying it to all the people. I loved him, and I just want you to know that. So for all of us, it's something which is very important. There will be no reconciliation, no peace with God, if when you leave now, you are not able to understand that in the name of love, you have to give to every dimension of your being and all the people around you what is due to them. وَأَعْتِقُ الَّذِي حَقِّ حَقَّ. Give everything. Your mind, study. Your heart, love. Your body, eat. Just what is necessary. But this is the way. And for the people around you, they are expecting something from them, give them. Give. You are here to free yourself from your ego and to give. And this is what the Prophet, peace be upon him, was. He was the one who gives. He is the one who gives. He is the one who is just trying to say, I don't want to leave this world being in debt. I don't want that. And he went to the mosque, very sick. Is there someone to whom I have to give something? And someone said, yes. He said, give the money that it's due to. I think this is a very important message, because at the end of the day you understand that he started by converting to reconcile himself with God, to get peace, and at the end he left by saying, I want peace with all of you. I want to live in peace. And this is the very meaning of Islam, that we got through his life. And I would say that this is maybe what we have to teach ourselves and teach our kids. And mainly, if only the people around us would understand what it means for us as Muslims. Why do we love him so much? Why do we love this prophet and this messenger so much? Not because we are idealizing, but it's a mirror and it's a means towards the one. I think that this would be the message that the people could understand. And once again, first is not to please the people that we are talking like that. I'm very scared of many Muslims. They were very happy when I speak like that and say, oh, the non-Muslims are going to be happy. I don't care. I'm not here to please the non-Muslims, but to teach the Muslims how to understand his life. And when they understand his life, this is the way we are going to be respected by anyone on the surface of the earth, because this is the very teaching, the universal teaching of all the spiritualities, if only one understands.
Question answer session. We'll take a few questions at a time. Please keep them brief. We don't have very long, and it's good to get as many questions as possible. Does anyone have any questions?
I was wondering about the poet. My name is Mona, I'm from Egypt. I was wondering about the poet when you discussed that Muslims had when they moved from Mecca to Medina. I don't feel it's analogous to what's happening for when Muslims come to Britain, because Britain is a non-Muslim country, and then when Muslims moved from Mecca to Medina, this was moving from a non-Muslim to a Muslim country, not the other way around. So I don't know how would one sort of apply this.
So the three questions were, how can Muslims live at peace in a consumerist culture? How to separate religion from culture? And is the analogy of Muslims moving from Mecca to Medina, analogous to moving to Britain today?
I think that your question is critical. Because I think today what we have, and by the way, I wouldn't say it's different in Muslim-majority countries. We are in a world culture where consumerism is almost the rule everywhere. So this is where, if we want to be serious about a consumerist culture, we have to come back to the meanings. How do we deal with this? And I would say that there is something that I would call the very essence of jihad. Not only effort as we translate it, but for me, jihad is resistance and transformation. Resistance to what could be bad or what is not ethical, and transformation towards what is better. When it comes to our dealing with the dominant culture today, there is no other way but to resist. And to resist is to ask yourself, what do you drink, what do you eat, the way you dress, and not to only be satisfied with technicalities. Because the world culture, and you know, now we know this, transnational corporations, they know exactly how to integrate your resistance when it's a technical resistance. When you have in many suburbs and now, you know, the rap culture and all that say, yes, we don't like the system. But they are dressed by the system. And they use the system. And the system is using them. So for the system, it's a win-win strategy. We are not going to resist anything in that way if we are not getting from within that the true resistance to consumerism is the primacy of meaning. Ends, objectives, what do we want? So for example, I know that I'm, you know, some Muslims are not happy with me saying this, but there are some drinks that I don't drink. I don't drink because they are translating the world culture. It might be simple for you just to dream and to say, halal, bismillah, in the name of God, say, that's fine. But the very meaning of the way you drink and the way, you know, for me, by definition, fast foods are against anything which is ethical. So when I have halal McDonald's, I have a problem. But you are laughing, but it's a very important discussion here. It's critical. It's very critical. Because I'm sorry to see so many Muslims very technical about, you know, some of them they don't even pray, but they want halal meat. It's technicality. And the very deep meaning is not there. The true resistance, if there is something that the Muslims with Christians and all of people of spiritualities could bring in this society, is how do we resist? And we resist and we transform. In which way we are coming with other products, in other way to drink and eat. When, for example, I go to, you know, and some people are doing much better than us in the center of, you know, the world culture, of the production of this world culture. So I'm not saying it's easy. It's maybe the most difficult struggle that we have to, on, you know, when it comes to the meaning of things and the culture. When you are talking about you from Pakistan, you know, once again I keep repeating this because I wrote this in To Be a European Muslim. And when you come to the countries of origin, when Muslim-majority countries, there is a great deal of confusion between religion and culture. But there is something which is difficult. From even the terminology in Islam, when you say ma'ruf, you have in the Quran in ma'ruf, meaning what is good. It's understood, the translation is what is good. But if you come back to the root of the word, in fact, in ma'ruf is al-hukm wal-urf. Ma'ruf, there is urf in it. It's known by the people as being good. So there is the rule which is good, it's the reveal, but also known by the people as being good. So you have something which is a cultural dimension with a rule. Now this is where it's quite important for us to understand that Islam is a set of principles. And we have to be critical with anything which has to do with culture. And the way I put it, it's simple, have to be, but it's not easy. Yes, there is no religion without culture, no culture without religion, but religion is not culture. So you don't have principles like this without a culture. It has to be rooted in a culture. And you don't have a culture without a system of values. In Pakistan, in Bangladesh, everywhere. But this is not that. So sometimes you have to come and to say, for example, in some culture there is projection onto the text on things that are coming from a specific culture. So we read the Quran through the prism of the patriarchal culture in Pakistan by saying this is Islam. But if you come to the text, you can find in the text things that are questioning this reading by saying that's not true. This is the way you think about it. This is the way you are translating it into your culture. So I would say that we are too much accepting some of the interpretation that are cultural and not the only Islamic way to deal with that. So I would say to everyone, be careful with this and question some of the answers that you get in the culture, in the way, for example, women are treated in some culture, in the way authority, diversity. These are things that we have to question. Even the way we educate people, it's very, very often culture. Why, for example, the scholars are saying, if I come to come to me and you ask me a question about a rule, for example, a hukm, you have the right not only to get my answer, but from where this answer is coming. Tell me, I want to know an adilla. Where are you coming from? Why is this? This is your opinion or is it based on the sources? Meaning what? That every single ordinary Muslim, when he's asking about a rule, should not only get the answer, but the whole process. He has to be autonomous. How do you call this now? Critical thinking. I want to know, where do you come from? Critical thinking, I'm not going to accept. I'm not muqallid. Muqallid is, you tell me and I follow. No, you tell me, I want to understand. Because the only right way to follow is to understand why I'm following. Okay, it means that you have critical thinking. In many of our cultures of origin, it's what you repeat. You don't talk. So we go to the mosque, and we have a problem with authority. The only right way from an Islamic viewpoint is to challenge the authority in order to acknowledge the authority of the teacher, and not only to listen and to repeat. This is much more cultural than Islamic. So this is the way I think that we have to deal with this. And this is why I'm saying, for example, in the West, in the educational process, in our universities here, it's closer to Islam, to what the Islamic principles are teaching, than what we have in many universities in the Arab or the Asian world. Because we are repeating. And this is why, once I was in Qatar, we had a discussion about free speech. I said, of course we need free speech. It's an objective of education. We need to be able to question. Why are we scared of questions? When you are scared of questions, it means that you are not confident with your answers. It might be the state of affairs within many Muslim majority countries today, and it's coming from our culture. To protect from questioning is a problem. And the last question, I think that it's not a question of being a majority or not. By the way, Medina at the beginning was not a majority Muslim society first. And they were dealing with the Ansari culture. And this is the point for me. The point is that it was very patriarchal in Mecca and much less in Medina. So the questions were exactly the same. And the Muslims who became Muslims, they were looking at the Muhajirun in a way that you don't have the same way of dealing with some of the issues. And for example, when it comes to arts, when the Prophet, peace be upon him, heard that there is a marriage, he said they like music, they like singing. The Meccan people, they were not like this. I said, no, we don't like that. So the taste was different. What did he say? Respect their taste. Because when you respect the taste of the people, you get their heart. Because you can't ask me to have my heart with you if every time I express something which is coming from my taste, you say, haram, That's not going to work. Why I'm telling you this? Because many of the British who are converting to Islam, they have a problem with Muslims. Because they understand that the only way to be at peace with the Muslim community is to be an Arab. Or an Egyptian. And you know, as I know, that not everything in the Egyptian culture is good. Don't you know that?
This was my fault.
Questions.
You spoke about the relation between knowledge and love. For a person who doesn't know much about Islam, could you give an example from the life of Muhammad, peace be upon him, in which he realized this relation between knowledge and love?
Questions? In the middle. Yeah.
And mine's a pretty similar question, and you don't need to answer it if it overlaps too much. But it's, I mean, a really important point you make about love. Because from outside of Islam, then many people will often say that Islam doesn't encapsulate love, for example, as the message of Christianity does, some people say. And then within Islam, people will say that the relationship between ourselves and God is more complex than just love. But that's not my personal experience of God, and as a, you know, when I come to this, so what would you say Islamically, whether from the Quran or Hadith, or things to tell us within the audience as Muslims and non-Muslims, to justify what you said there? Because I think it's a wonderful thing, but I think it's a message which needs to be told a lot more, because a lot of people are afraid of using that relationship between ourselves and God as love.
You just described the way of living within a consumer society. What if it is in Muslims' hand to build the society themselves? Do you think Islam is reconcilable with capitalism at all?
Okay. So the three questions are, can you give an example in the life of the Prophet of the relationship between knowledge and love? Can you justify the Islamic concepts of love with God? And can Islam ever be reconciled with capitalism?
So I'm sorry to have to give answers that are short, because the three questions are in fact questions for one lecture, every single question. And they are very important questions. I tried during my talk to give you some examples. The first is really this one, which is very important, is the knowledge of God, and it started with this, Aqra, read in the name of God. But read what? Read first the universe, nature around you, the comma, the moon, the sun, the trees, look at them. And this is something which is, this, the way you look is to respect, and it's this relationship of love. You respect and you love nature is the way you love God. So it's the micro picture here, which is so important. At the something which is more intimate is the way he was talking with, the way you deal with human beings. And once, for example, this is something which is it's important in all these dimensions. And you have it in the Quran, in kuntum tuhibbun Allah, if you love God. And then all this knowledge, we don't worship knowledge. Knowledge is but a means to get close to Him. And this closeness is the way we are going to be loved and to love Him. Through the way we are with nature, with our parents, this is something which is so important. The quality of your love towards your parents says something about you, the quality of your love towards God. This is the essence of Islam. It's all this. With whom should I be the best? With your mother. Who else? Mother, and then your father. It's good the father is mentioned. But it's so important. It's really, you know, it's really, I was sent to complete, to beautify all the good characters, all the noble behavior. And the noble behavior is all about love. It's all about this dimension. So towards your parents is very important. The way, don't say, oops, just show them this tenderness, protect them with your tenderness. And the very essence of the word is what? Rahma. Irhamhuma, it just be merciful towards them, because he is the Rahman. So the second name of God is Ar-Rahman, is full of mercy, the most merciful. And I would say that when you ponder over all these dimensions, you understand the very essence here of how this reconciliation is going through his love, and the way you love nature, you love human beings. And even more importantly, I would say, in this relationship is with this knowledge. When you are striving for justice, love is not only, you know, peace and love and passivity. Love is about standing up. If you love God and you love justice, you have to stand up when there are injustices. Love is not the way to just, you know, I pray during the night, I disappear during the day. It's not this kind of Sufism new look that we have, where people say, oh, this is the good Islam. It's a new Sufism that is never, you know, in the very old tradition. Sufism is Islamic, it's the heart of Islam. It's the way you love him, but in order to show to the people, I love justice. And because I love justice, my knowledge should be about, you know, I'm just with my own mind when I get knowledge. And then with this, it's in the name of his love, I'm going to try to implement justice. So it's all about this. Use all your knowledge to implement the objectives that he is setting for you. Justice, dignity, and freedom for the people. So this is it. I think that this is where you get a sense of knowing him, knowing the principles, and using all this to implement, and this implementation is out of love. This is the way you have to look at it. So, you know, Imam Nawawi was saying there are levels, that sometimes you do things because you are scared of the reward of the punishment. But beyond this, the highest level of your faith should be to do this because you love him, not because you are scared of being punished. And this is the most difficult thing to achieve, as I'm doing this. But in fact, this love is pushing you towards active commitment towards the principles. So this is the way it has to be translated in our life, and knowledge should be the driving force, the driving means in the whole process. So talabul ilm, this seeking knowledge, is all based about on this dimension. We have to repeat that. And yes, I know that it's not said enough, and let me tell you something. I was born and raised in a family which was very much committed towards, you know, justice and things. And I have a mother and a father. My father passed away, rahimahullah, but my mother is still there. It was all about this. Our message is love. And this is what we have to do. When I started, and I said to my parents, you know what is important for me is solidarity work. I went to South America where there were no Muslims. Or I went to Africa and with the Tibetans. They were saying, good. Do this. Solidarity is good. This is the way you show that you care about human beings. And by doing this and getting a message of love at home, I went to South America and I met with priests. And they were dealing with poor people. And they were liberation theologians. You know, this reading through the eyes of the poor. And I was just, they taught me a lot. To what they were saying. You know, I didn't start interfaith dialogue around the table. I was on the ground with the people, you know, working with them. And I saw them working. I saw how much they were caring about the poor people, saying, this is the way we love God. This is, we serve the poor. And then I came back to my own tradition, understanding that this was in my tradition. I said, if you love God, you have to care about the poor people. There is no other way. Tell me how much you care about the poor, I will know how much you care about God in your life. Anything else is just, you know, discourses and statements. You are fasting 1 month a year for what? To love the poor, to experience what they are experiencing, and to be close to the one. This is where we have to come back and to get a sense of this. And when I went back to Egypt and I studied,
you know, I studied so many hours with great scholars in you know, what we had ijazat, that the scholars giving you the authorization that you can teach. And I remember once, it was at 5 o'clock in the morning, I went out of one course when the teacher was telling me the meaning of one verse of the Quran. إِنَّ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَاخْتِلَافِ اللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَرِ لَآيَاتٍ لِأُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ. There are in the creation of earth and heavens and the alternation of nights and day signs for those who are full of insight. And I was told by the, it was at the end of the course, he told me, you know what happened when the Prophet got this message, peace be upon him? He cried the whole night. And he cried the whole night and he said to Bilal, who saw him, what is happening? He said, I got this message. Or to any one of you who is listening to this message and don't meditate this message. What is this message? Talking about punishment? No. Talking about reward? No. Talking about nature. There are signs in this name. And he cried. Meaning what? These are blessings around you. These are the manifestations of God's love. On you, you understand this. And I get this, you know what I said to myself? Anything that I'm going to write, you will find this verse somewhere. I have no book without this verse. You go on my website, the first thing that you have is the verse. It's just to remind me the very essence of this religion is all about this. He cried out of love and said to the one who was coming to call to the prayer, never forget to meditate the meaning of Allah's grace, God's grace towards you. He gave you this creation. If only as Muslims you come to this, you will find that this is the universal message that we have in Christianity. So to say, oh, Islam is about justice and Christianity is about love, I think that both are wrong. Christianity should be about love and justice. Never forget justice. And Islam is about justice without forgetting love. This is where we can come together. Because to go to someone who is poor and oppressed and say, you know what, I love you, that's fine. But if you can help me to get justice, it could be good. No, I think I'm serious. I'm serious. Because what I don't like in our discussion today, interfaith dialogue in Britain or in the West, is that we are scared to come as citizens saying, I'm a Christian. I care about love, but I want justice in this society. 24 million people being under the line of poverty in industrialized society. It's not acceptable from our human conscience. And as a Christian, it's not only I love the poor and every Christmas I'm going to give them something. Well, now the Muslims are doing exactly the same during Ramadan. MashaAllah, we gave. I think it's wrong. I think that we have to be much more committed towards justice. It's a civil obligation. And this is the way I think that we can reconcile, you know, our status as citizens and our spirituality as believers. I would, without imposing anything, but to struggle for more justice in our society. And the last question. I would say no, that, you know, capitalism will see the way it is. The very logic of capitalism is to get, you know, this increasing and growth and all this logic, the very essence of it is problematic. But I wouldn't say by definition it's an opposition. I think that the Muslims within something which is accepting the fact that the people are driven by personal interests, you need to find a balance, so regulation. And if you listen to what he said, for example, I don't know if you follow what Stiglitz is saying now, or Soros, where the people who are within the capitalist system, what they say today is that we need more ethics in the process. And they talk about regulation. I don't see something that could be ethical capitalism. I think it's a contradiction in terms. This is the way I perceive it. But I still think that what the Muslims today are doing to face the reality of the neoliberal system is nothing. There is no alternative. We put Islamic in some of the technicalities that we have, but we are not proposing an alternative economic model. So this is why I think we have to question ourselves about the ends of what we want to provide as an economic system.
very much, Father, from Oman. Unfortunately, there are no more time for questions. I think the speech was very enlightening. I think the tagline of the week has been "See things differently," and that probably applies just as much to Muslims as to non-Muslims. Tomorrow's talk for Islam Week is on the Quran by Mr. Timothy Winter. He's a lecturer here in Cambridge in the Faculty of Theology. It will take place at 7:30 in the Jusia Windsor Room in Union College. The Friday prayers are also open to everyone this week. It's also led by Mr. Timothy Winters, and it will be in English. Please do come along. That's a real chance to experience Islam. It will be at 1:15 p.m. in St. Columbus's Hall on Downing Street. Just a notice that the evening of spirituality has been moved from coming Sunday to Sunday, 13th of March. Finally, please fill out your feedback forms. It would be really, really helpful. The refreshments are available outside with a range of reading materials, and Islam Society members are milling around for a chat, so please do grab one of us and speak to us if you like. We are selling Zahid Ramadan's book, The Messenger, over here to my left, £10 a copy, and the professor will be signing books, but only for the next 10 minutes. So if you please do purchase the book, and only come to the table if you're going to get that book signed, because there's not enough time, he has to rush off for a train. So thank you very much.